All right, guys, before we jump in, I want to tell you real quick about the 0 to 100 Elite Mastermind. This is our own high-level group for serious real estate investors looking to scale fast. Inside, we share deals, strategies, and we build real relationships all to grow our cash flow portfolios. And you know what? Most members actually add 10-plus units in their first year. Plus, you'll get exclusive access to our podcast guests for direct Q&A. If you're chasing time freedom through real estate, check it out at 0to100tribe.com. That's Z-E-R-O-T-O, the number 100, tribe.com. Now, enjoy the show.
People like us still make mistakes. We're still learning our own lessons. And now I'm just like, how can I focus on the future? Things happen for you and not to you. And I think this happened for me. I've literally written down lessons. Like, what have I learned? There's so much that I can learn, and I'll actually make millions and millions and millions of dollars more in the future because of what's happened to me over this last 12 months.
Being on some chill, we go 0 to 100 real quick.
Welcome to the 0 to 100 podcast. I'm Travis Dillard, and we're all about scaling a cash flow real estate portfolio from zero to over 100 units and achieving your retirement number one, or R1. That's where passive income from real estate replaces your day job and gives you complete time freedom, which is the new currency of the rich.
This is Gabriel Hamill. Here at 0 to 100, you will not hear us talk about house flipping, spec homes, wholesaling, or land banking. We are only about achieving time freedom through buying and holding cash flow real estate. So remember, if R1 is the destination, real estate is the vehicle, and cash flow is the gas. Now go out there and buy some cash flow real estate.
I'm Mitchell England, and I'm thrilled to have you on board. With our combined real estate holdings valued over $100 million, learn from us and others who've achieved time freedom through cash flow real estate.
Welcome to the 0 to 100 podcast show, where we talk all things buy and hold cash flow real estate. Today, we're going to talk about failure and how to fail forward. We're going to talk about real estate failures. I guess we'll probably talk about successes as well. Yeah, I know this is your guys' favorite topic.
I said in the comments on the All Hands call, I said, Mitch is an expert in this area.
Hey, you know what? I am, and I'm proud of it. All right. I have a lot of failures.
There's three of us. There's Mitch, who can't get out of bed without failing. There's Gabe, who's never failed and never gets sick, by the way.
Yeah.
And there's me, who never gets sick, but I've actually had some really fun failures in my life.
Gabe miscounted his pull-ups one time. And so now he's upset about it.
We should loop in business failures too, because Mitch and I have, like,
we do. We should, yeah.
Had a few too much to drink on the road talking about our failures, and it's fucking hilarious. Some of my failures, but some of Mitch's failures, some of his business ideas that were, if I sound like I'm laughing at you, Mitch, it's because I am.
I definitely thought you were laughing at Mitch. Here's the interesting thing about failure. Like, I don't remember where this quote comes from, but it's, you know, people get rewarded in public for what they do in private. So it's a lot of times we see the result, or we see the outcome, we see the success someone has. And you look at some of the top entrepreneurs and business people in the world, and a lot of them have a ton of failures. I mean, Mitch, you put a post in the 0 to 100. What was it on? Was it on the, I don't know if it was the Elite group or what. It was Abraham Lincoln.
That's right. Yeah.
And it was all the things that he failed at prior to becoming president. And it's quite a long list, but we often forget about those long lists of failures. And we only remember or recognize or see what these successful people do kind of at the end, or what they're known for. So
that was crazy, because I think the only thing Abraham Lincoln ever succeeded at was becoming president and maybe helping abolish slavery, which are two pretty big deals. But
yeah, I mean, he's a big deal, obviously, but it's funny, because you look at him and you look at other people throughout history, and you're like, there are so many failures, but what makes them different is they just don't stop. And I don't know if they give the credit to failing like a lot of people do. Like, people put such a weight on it, such a, like, a, oh, I failed, therefore I should be safer, I should stop, or I should be more rational, or I should be. And I think people that are really successful, like, they're almost like, I don't know if I want to say like laugh in the face of it a little bit, but a little bit, where it's just like, yeah, it's kind of part of the journey. Like, when you grow up and you ride a bike, like, you fall off. You try to walk for the first time, you fall down. Like, our childhoods are based, like, we as humans learn by failing. And then for some reason, as we become adults, we go through the school system and whatever society or culture, whatever, we all of a sudden we're like, oh, we can't fail anymore. That's embarrassing, or that's too much, or that's too heavy. And I'm like, bullshit. I think there's a lot of laughter and humor and failure and fun in like trying things and like iterating and taking feedback via failure.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. Like, I think about the school system where like you're really taught not to fail. Like, it's looked down upon to fail. I know I jokingly, or maybe you didn't even realize, you know, think it was a joke when I was texting you guys. I said, there's no failure. You either win or you learn. And I really believe that, because you can fail at something and just beat yourself up about it. Or you can take that as an opportunity to grow and learn. And I think there's a lot of opportunity to grow and learn. It's when you fail over and over and over and you don't take that as an opportunity to get better or grow from. Some people just stop. But I think, again, that some of the most successful people, it goes back to like they have failed at a lot of things leading up to that success. So
all joking aside, I probably failed more than anybody on this call in my life.
Honestly, knowing you just in working with you, and wait, I want to get into some of your stories, Travis, early on. I think you're a complete failure. No, I'm just joking. So I, no, I mean, I can say
that's what my parents always said.
Well, your dad said, I know Travis has some daddy issues going on. So, but I can say like Travis has this, and we work together in bit, you know, in a lot of our real estate. And so it's like, I can see that really up close, but Travis has this resilience where it's like, if you fail it, that's just kind of part of it. You just keep pushing and push. You never, ever stop. And I love that. And I think that's what makes entrepreneur a difference. I know you're the same, Gabe, looking back into your story about wrestling, about different things you tried early on where you were kind of hitting your head against the wall, but it's like, you just don't ever stop. I think what's interesting is that people that are successful have a different relationship with failure. It's not that you don't fail. You just think of it way differently. There was a story about Sarah Blakely I was listening to. She was being interviewed on a podcast, I think it was. And she was like, part of my upbringing was I'd come home and we sit down at the dinner table. My dad would ask me one question at dinner, every single dinner. That's, what did you fail today at? The reason he asked that was, he's like, I want you to be trying things that are so hard and so outside your comfort zone that you have the potential to fail. And she was wired for that. And by the time she got into her 20s, she was selling door to door, you know, I think she was selling like fax machines or printers or whatever that was. And she's going door to door. And she's like, I was failing over and over again, selling out of my car. But that was just, I was kind of trained for that. And I think she became like the earliest woman billionaire.
I think she is. If you guys don't know who Sarah Blakely is, she's the founder of Spanx. I do believe she is the first female billionaire. Her husband, Jesse Itzler, also an amazing entrepreneur. My wife and I had a chance to see them speak. It was actually at Grant Cardone's 10X conference many years ago. They both spoke there and I'm like, gosh, I want to hang out with these people. Like, amazing entrepreneurs. They just seem like amazing humans as well. But it's true. She's a story of like, failing. And I think, Mitch, you nailed it. It's that resilience piece. It's that, like, everybody, there's not a human that doesn't fail, but it's what you do with that failure that counts. I mean, some people can let that failure stop them and some can let that fuel them. And I think that's the big differentiator, is like, what do you do with that failure? Do you take that and use that as an opportunity, or do you let it just own you and kill you and stop you in your tracks from achieving whatever it is that you set out to achieve?
I love that we're talking about this, and not to go on a soapbox, because I tend to do that, but I think, and I'm sorry if I'm going to offend any of the listeners out here, like public school teachers, but my gosh, I think the public school system, at least some of the experiences I'm having with my own kids, is a fucking joke in some cases. And I say this, which certain parts of it ties back to what we're talking about today. Like, I've got a son who gets an N, not meet requirements for reading. And we read every day with our kids, every night. Our kids love reading. And no explanation, just basically fail. You failed. And so I call the teacher and I'm talking. It's like, oh no, he's a great reader. He reads above a fifth grade level. He's in the fourth grade. I'm like, well, then why the hell did he get an N? It's like, oh, because there's this test that he takes, and because he failed that, or he got a 65%, he's an N. And I'm just like, the school system says you fail because you don't take a test, or you fail, which by the way is complete horseshit. And the school system also teaches you that you have to remember, you can't work as a team, right? And the school system says don't fail. And that's it. And people get out in life and they're fucking terrified to fail. They're like, I'm going to get a job. I'm going to get a safe job. I'm going to be a W-2er, and I'm not going to do anything. I'm going to give my money to Wall Street because then I can't fail. Right? Because we're told failure is bad, 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 bad. And I'm going to tell you, like, the biggest breakthroughs I've had in my life are through failure. But you've got to get over the fear of it, because if you live your life terrified of failure, then you're going to be working until you're 65. And I would say that's working until you're 65 and retiring poor and giving all your money to the government and Wall Street. I would say that's a failure.
I think too, there's a lot of like fatalism assigned to failure, because like when you say failure, you know, maybe your brain goes to like, well, you lose your housing and your job and you're living on the streets or whatever. And like, I was talking to an entrepreneur the other day who has a W-2 and he wants to get out. And I'm like, what's your worst case scenario? And he goes, well, if I fail. And I'm like, what does failure look like? And he's like, well, I would have to, I don't know. He kept going through and he goes, I'd have to go back to work. And I go, well, is there demand for what you do? And he goes, yeah. And I'm like, how fast could you get a job? 2 weeks. And I'm like, okay, then.
So he'd be in the exact situation that he's in today if he failed.
Exact situation. But he was assigning, and he said it openly, he goes, I was assigning this much more fatalistic sort of reality to my failure. Like I'm on the streets and I lose my house. Like there's this like innate fear. And I'm like, but actually most failures put you a step back. They don't demolish you. I'm not talking about failures where you, yeah. And so some entrepreneurs go through this, right? Where they lose everything. We hear those stories, but I'm also not talking about that. There's a lot of failure every day that we go through, even in my life today, where I'm like, I try something, it doesn't work. I'm constantly failing forward and iterating and taking that as feedback, even small failures, some of them bigger than others.
I like that. I think we should change the name failure. I was just thinking when you were rambling on monotonously, and I tend to think about other things when you talk.
I like how this just cracks Gage. He loves this. Yeah.
Travis, you're failing and being a nice guy.
Yeah, you definitely are.
Whatever words you're going to put there.
It's called bully. Yeah. We know what this is. Yeah.
So listen, why not change the name to just like learn and iterate? Because that's really what it is, right? Failure is like, that's a, yeah. I do agree with you for once. Like that's a fatalistic, like I failed and then I'm under a bridge. I'm homeless. My wife left me. My kids disowned me. Somehow I got hooked on fentanyl. Like I'm a zombie and someone just, you know, shat my Wheaties. Like boom, I failed. Life's over. But yeah, I agree.
That all happened to Travis, by the way.
Hey, that's just a Tuesday for me.
Man, we need to hear that story because that was.
Let's get into that.
You know what? Can you talk about the Wheaties for a second? Like
I think it goes beyond failure. We talk a lot about mindset, but the example Mitch you just used, it's the fear of failure. So a lot of times people stop themselves from trying because they get caught up in all the like, what if I don't succeed?
Or worse yet, they never start. They don't even start.
They don't start. So they didn't even give themselves an opportunity to fail. But it's like, what if they succeed? Or what if they fail five times and they succeed on the sixth? But a lot of people don't try. I think it's the fear of failure that holds people back more than even failure itself. A lot of times, you know, as we've already said, the people that do fail find a way to succeed because they are driven and they have that resilience and they have something that they're really driven towards. And so they don't allow that failure to stop them. But oftentimes it's those that don't start. They let that fear hold them back from even trying. They don't get to experience failure or success. And then that's when you're going, gosh, did I really live my life fully? Did I really go after my dreams? And I don't want that for anyone. I don't want anyone to be coming to the end of their life wondering like, hey, did I fully live? Did I really do everything that I wanted to do in life? Did I at least try, you know? And that's, to me, maybe that's failure in and of itself.
I think there's some truth to that. Yeah.
You certainly want to be on your deathbed going, yeah, man, like I was swinging. Yeah. I missed some, like I hit in the head with the ball a few times, but like I was at the plate swinging. I was in the arena. What's that metaphor? It talks about the guy in the arena, right? Everybody watches and people fail. And aha, see? He's a failure. He just fell down. But it's like the guy or girl that's in the arena getting dirty, that's out swinging and missing and swinging and hitting. Something else that in the mastermind, we said this. I think we're just sort of saying it tongue in cheek, but when we're sort of recapping at the end of our mastermind, which by the way was amazing. For those of you that joined, we really appreciate it. It was awesome. But someone said like, there was an aha moment because they said like, why not you? I think some people think they forget like, why not me? Oh, because you know, why can't I do that? Why can't I win? You know, why can't I make that work for myself? I'd love to talk about everybody's failures. I can list off. It'd be interesting for like, because also last thing I'll say is I think a lot of people, they see people on social media or maybe they even look at people like me and Mitch, probably less Mitch, more me, but like, oh, that person's really successful. And but like that's them, that's not me, and everything they do turns to gold and it's great. Like, but when you actually listen to success, and I have a big real estate portfolio, I've been really successful building and selling a company. But like when you see someone like me talk, you're like, oh yeah, that guy did never fail. But if you so hopefully people that are listening to this can hear some of our failures. Some of them are bigger than others, except Gabe, of course. I guess Gabe will be the moderator because he doesn't fail. Well, I was just going to say, it'd be interesting for people to hear, like, what are our failures and, like, what did we learn from it? I'd love for us to do some round robin on that. that topic.
I want to just like preface this like conversation going forward with like this definition: success equals failure after failure without loss of enthusiasm. I love that. I tend to believe that failure, or I should say, I tend to believe that the bucket of success is made up of a lot of failures. And I can even look at my portfolio today, or Travis and I's, like, think about Bridgeton, right? We have a property out in North Carolina where it's like, that property is a very successful property. I can name 25 failures inside of there. Things that we've tried, things that we've iterated on, things that didn't work. And like, and then I look at my life and I'm like, there's several failures along the way to success. So like, when you're listening to our stories, realize like, I think that success is built on the bricks of failure. Literally. Is there anything that you guys, that's glaring in your brain going, I got to talk about this time in my journey?
I mean, I could start on that conversation. My Lord, I mean, like, read my bio. I've failed considerably. I could just list off things like my very first company I started was a complete failure, bankrupted. Went into business with a guy. He was a workaholic. Then he turned into an alcoholic and he drained all of our company accounts. His wife was the bookkeeper. They paid themselves five times as much as they paid me. I didn't know it. They didn't pay any of the bills and then they bankrupted it. I had the IRS at my door because they didn't pay the payroll taxes. There was several hundred thousand dollars in personal guaranteed debt. Like it was a complete disaster. So within 23 months, we were basically bankrupt. This company that was my first company. That was a big failure. I was like, I got kicked in the face before I even started. The worst thing about that, I lost some money and I went back and got a job. Like I literally owed the IRS hundreds of thousands of dollars. I owed vendors that I was personally guaranteed on, which I didn't even understand what a personal guarantee was, hundreds of thousands of dollars. It was a complete disaster. My business partner, who was an alcoholic, vaporized. He disappeared. His wife basically embezzled most of all the money out of the company. And here I am like 23 years old. That's how I started my professional career.
So why did you, like, you went through this thing, like, why did you keep going as an entrepreneur? Like, I mean, why, this is what I want to unpack a little bit, because I think your stories about other entrepreneurs that have gone through these insane times, and I'm always listening to these podcasts going like, why didn't you just get a job? I mean, I've had some bumps along the road, but that's one where you're like, oh shit, like I'm hundreds of thousands of dollars. Like, yeah. So you hit that failure out of the park, but why did you keep going?
Just to reiterate, like that's the first one. Like most people fail. They're like, fuck that. I'm never doing that again. I'll learn my lesson. And I just kept going.
Yeah.
I actually talk about this in the book. For those of you that don't have the book, go to Amazon 0 to 100 units, or you go to our website, 0to100tribe.com. When I talk about it, honestly, it goes back to the very first exercise that we had in our mastermind. What was that? It's like figuring out your why. Why the hell are we trying to scale to R1? Why are we trying to achieve time, financial freedom, right? And everybody was like, when we went around the table, it was like, oh, my why is I want financial freedom. I want money, you know? And when you were like, oh, really, like, let's dig deep. What's the why behind your why? Well, I had a really burning why. And it comes down to that. Like, people that have a burning why, they fail and they win, like, you read the story about the guy that started Kentucky Fried Chicken, right? He just kept getting told no and failing. And you know, he finally like hit it big when he was like 70 or something. Don't quote me on that. So my why was so much stronger than my fear, I think, of failure. And I just couldn't settle for mediocrity. So I was just going to keep going until I figured it out. And by the way, talking about like the wins, like I was 23 years old. There was people that were getting their MBA at that time. This business failed and I had to go back in. And I had to go back and reconstruct what the hell happened. I had to go back through my profit and loss statements. I had to understand job costing and labor. And I had to understand like what I did wrong. What was wrong with sales and marketing and like accounting and controls and all the things. That was the best MBA I could have gotten. I could have gone to fucking Harvard and got an MBA. And this would have been a better MBA. I was a 23-year-old kid that tried to start a business and understand collections and receivables and payables and cash flow management and all the shit that you had to learn in real life. So, yeah, man, like would I do it again? Hell yeah, I would do it again.
The why is really, really important, because if you don't have a why, then you can't. The problem is, or I think the value of the why is that it pulls you through those times where you're looking at your life going, oh my gosh, it's, you know, hundreds of thousands of debt and I've lost everything I tried to build. But if you have a burning why, something that pulls you, then you can pull through those things.
I was more fearful of being mediocre. I'd been mediocre my whole life and I was from humble beginnings and I was more fearful of that than failing again.
What about you, Gabe? Anything? I mean, have you ever failed? Is there anything you can think about specific to
to real estate, it's more on a personal level. Like I shared before, but not often, because I think it's easier to share the wins. It's easier to share the successes. I mean, you know, it's the Instagrammable highlight reels and all that. And that's fun, right? And I have a lot of wins and successes that I enjoy sharing, and I hope it inspires people.
For sure.
What I think of, in general, when I think of failing, I also, as I said before, I think it is an opportunity to learn and grow. And the first thing that came to mind was really kind of just my early years investing, and but more so on a personal level, because when I met my now wife, it was my focus was so much like I'm going to build this real estate portfolio, and was so focused on financial freedom. I didn't really put like our relationship first.
Yep.
It was like, I like you, but I'm not going to let you get in the way of my dreams, my goals, my plans. So there wasn't a lot of we early on in the relationship. It was very much me. It was this very one track selfish, like I have goals. My goals are financial freedom. I'm going to do that through real estate. And, you know, in those early years, yeah, that caused a lot of challenges in the relationship. I think, you know, that's,
yep.
But again, it was an opportunity to learn and grow. So yeah, I think there's a lot of things that I failed at early on, but without that, I don't think it would give me the opportunity to grow and be the husband I am today. And I still have lots of room to grow. I don't want to ever stop. And that's in any area of my life. You know, I was very one-track focused in one area. I've read all these books on real estate investing and, you know, realizing that, you know, only after we separated for 6 months, like, gosh, I've never read a book on marriage. I've never read a book on relationships. I've never listened to a podcast on that. I haven't really reflected much on those things. And so even though it's not directly, say, a business or real estate failure, I think I allowed what I wanted in business for a period of time early on to interfere with ultimately what was more important to me, which was having a good relationship and having an amazing family, which was a big reason why I wanted to have that financial freedom in the first place, was to have the time freedom to spend with my family, right? And so that was just, it was a big opportunity to learn and grow and become a better version of myself today. And I hope in 10 years from now, I look back and I'm a better version of myself then than I am now.
The journey to real estate scale or business or whatever also is littered with all these other personal things that are challenging. So I think it has everything to do with business and you know, building a really strong relationship and bringing somebody into your life is a really important piece of this. And it is hard because as entrepreneurs, a lot of times you're one track minded and you're super motivated and you're super like directional. And then you have a family, a wife, you know, or partner, or husband, or whoever that is. And you have kids and then they have lives and they have ambitions. I mean, I think I had to learn that too. I had to learn, like, my wife also had her own dreams that I needed to merge and figure out and build into my path. And so, yeah, I think that's really relevant. So I got a funny one, a failure of mine that I think was interesting. This was when I was selling real estate. I can probably write a book, honestly, about just like how to not sell real estate, because I was the guy. I ended up doing okay, you know, over time. But like in the beginning, I did everything wrong. And so this specific story, I called this gal. I used to cold call a lot. I finally got like an appointment this day with this gal. And so I call this gal and I get an appointment. I tell her, hey, you know, I want to list your house, blah, blah. And she goes, oh, well, why don't you come over, you know, Tuesday at 1 o'clock or whatever. So I'm like, oh my gosh, this is awesome. I'm super excited on the way home, you know? So I go home, get ready. The next day I go to this lady's house. Knock on the door. She answers. Nice little gal. I remember, I thought she spoke better English on the phone than she did when she answered. But I was like, you know what? I don't know. Like, I'm sure I'm just remembering it wrong or whatever. So she goes, well, come on inside. So I came inside. She sat the whole family down in the living room, right? I'm sitting on this couch, like between her and her husband, and the kids are, everyone's there, you know? And so I went through almost an hour long listing presentation with this gal and this family. And by the end, she said in broken English, I'll think about it. And I thought, okay, like she might list her house. I walked out and I looked back at the house and the address was wrong.
I had Richardson where this was going, but
are you serious?
100%.
100%.
That is awesome.
I spent almost an hour with this entire family in their living room trying to list their house, and we had never spoke before. We'd never spoke. So the other lady was super pissed. I didn't get the other listing either because I didn't show up. But this was how the beginning of my real estate career started, you know, this kind of stuff.
So what happened? Did you end up selling both houses or?
No, I didn't get anything. I got nothing out of that. Yeah, I just...
Did you go next door afterwards?
No, I went home and told my wife, and she just about died. She's going, you just spent an hour with the wrong people, you know? I said, the good news is, though, she said she might consider it, so we'll see if she sells.
That is amazing.
Yeah, so that's... my journey's littered with a lot of funny failures. I would show up at the wrong house or getting shut down, you know, cold calling or I tried a lot of different things early on. And I tried a lot of different businesses early on that I just, you know, I didn't understand how to get traction, you know. I tried to start like an energy company really early, which was pretty ridiculous, and selling real estate and numerous websites. And I mean, I would say I have a graveyard of ideas in my, especially my early 20s, trying to get something off the ground.
I mean, I think some of it comes down to execution too. I mean, I had a few different business ideas and plans. Soon after I got back from my deployment over in the Middle East,
yeah,
I opened up a small nutrition store with one of my friends that I was deployed with, and it was inside of a gym. It was an old like juice bar area, and we were looking for a storefront, and we didn't have a lot of funds, but he used to manage a nutrition store, and I just wanted to own my own business. And so we opened one inside of the gym that we worked out in.
Awesome.
And, you know, the overhead was low. It was $100 a month for the first 3 months. And then it went up all the way to $150 a month. And
not too high.
It was a good learning opportunity. I mean, you know, one thing I learned was, you know, a business has to make money to stay in business. And, you know, there was a lot of competition. Plus, we're just, you know, in the back corner of this, you know, of this gym. That was also around the time, though, I realized and then started really focusing on real estate. And so I would catch myself a lot of times, you know, there'd be a lot of downtime because people are only coming in buying vitamins every so often. And we actually were profitable. Like, we were profitable most months. But the reality is, like, $200 a month profitability some months just wasn't going to cut it. And I ended up buying him out, and same thing. It's like, you know, some months we made a couple $100, some months we made a couple $1,000s, but it wasn't a ton. And I really caught myself a lot of times either on the computer, like looking at property, realizing like that's where my energy went, like that's what I was actually excited about. Or I'd put a sign up that said, hey, if you need me, I'm downstairs working out. And
that's awesome.
You know, I don't think customers really like that. And then, you know, I'd be like in the middle of a set and someone's trying to find me so they can buy a Cliff Bar, and I'm like, I was like 20 cents profit on that thing, and they're interrupting my workout. Like,
totally worth your time. Yeah.
You know, I knew retail wasn't, you know, I quickly learned, or maybe not that quickly, that retail wasn't my path. But, you know, again, I don't look at these things as always a failure. Like, that gave me an opportunity to go, okay, real estate is really what I really need to lean into. There's obviously way more, you know, way more money to be made in real estate, you know, buying property and building a portfolio of cash flow in real estate. But it was a learning opportunity. It was an absolute learning opportunity to be behind a counter slinging vitamins for, you know, a couple $100 a month.
Well, let's talk about some real estate failures too. So we've all failed a business. Me worse than others. Mitch, to finish the business conversation, I mean, I won't list off like all the failures, but like I can tell you, I started a wine bottle distributing company that failed. I started a solo cup company where we put college logos on the solo cup. That failed. I started a telecom services company where we'd save people money on their telecom bill and take the savings. That failed. And I know Mitch has all kinds of weird shit in his garage that he tried to sell throughout the years.
I still have products, and I bought like thousands of dollars worth of light bulbs at one point. I mean, that's a whole nother... Yeah, Hannah keeps finding like these bins, and Hannah's my wife. She keeps finding these bins and she's going like, what's in here? I'm like, we don't need to go through. It's not important.
There's this that guy on social media that goes around and like interviews people driving nice cars or living in nice houses. I think we've all seen him. He always asks like, how much money have you made? You know, and they're like, $30 million. Like, okay. But he always asks like, have you ever been broke? And everybody laughs. They're like, or have you failed? Or have you been rogue? It was like, hell yeah. Like anybody, I think anybody that has had this like a staggering amount of success or a lot of success they're always going to have failure, unless it's like Zuckerberg, who like started this app in college and now he's a billionaire. Like that was easy. But like most of us mortals, like even Elon Musk has had failures. Even when you read Rich Dad Poor Dad, he talks about the nylon and velvet, that wallet business that he started in Hawaii.
That's right, yeah.
And he failed. Like everybody fails miserably, and so I think that I actually admire people that like try things and fail, and they get back up to the plate and keep swinging, and they learn and they iterate. Now, if you just keep doing the same stupid shit over and over again and never learn, then maybe go back to the post office. You know, no offense to anybody that works at the post office.
You can also find out what you're good at, though, because like I look back at my failures and I'm like, and real estate was always the thing that I understood for whatever reason. I don't know why, and I found early success in. I had a couple bumps in the road early on with real estate, a couple pieces of land that I didn't do well on. But other than those two pieces really early on, like 19 and 20 years old, real estate, it was always like I would do good in real estate and I would do bad in these other areas. And so I finally like got smart and I'm like, oh, maybe real estate's my thing. Maybe that's what I'm good at, you know, and that was before we scaled together, Travis. But like, I think also like taking in, you know, failing at a lot of things and failing fast and trying a lot of different things to understand like what's your unique skill and what are you good at and what do you like and what do you enjoy? Like it also just gives you an opportunity to like really understand like who you are. And there's this thing called the product market fit, right? I'm sure you guys have heard that, where it's like the product hits the market. It's the perfect market fit. It's priced perfectly. And it hits exponential growth very quickly. Product market fit. Well, I think there's a people market fit too. And I don't think you can get out of college or high school and know what market you should be in. I don't think any of us do. And so like trying these different things and falling on your face a couple of times gives you an opportunity to be like, hey, like, you know what? I've tried 8 or 9 things and I love this, and this is the thing I'm good at, and this is my niche. So anyway, there's some learning there too.
Specific to real estate investing, I think, you know, obviously, you know, we have a tribe of real estate investors, and one thing that I learned early on is to learn from other people's mistakes, because there can be a lot of costly mistakes in real estate. And I think it's important to get around people so you can learn what they're doing right. But it's also important to get around people to learn what they did, things that you can learn from. And that's something I really tried to adopt pretty early on. So I've shared this before, but 2012 was the first time I ever went to a paid event. It was a Real Estate Guys Summit at Sea. It was a real estate cruise. Robert Kiyosaki, his wife, his now ex-wife, a lot of his advisors, Ken McRoy, his CPA, a bunch of their advisors were on the ship as well. And what was interesting, you know, 2012, you're coming just, you know, it's just 4 years outside of the 2008, you know, subprime crash. But hearing experienced real estate investors, at the time, I only had 17 units. And so I'm hearing people that did fine during 2008. And I met a lot of people that lost millions and millions of dollars in 2008. And so I really took that, not even realizing I was taking that as an opportunity to learn from their mistakes, but just naturally the conversations people were having, it really cemented a few things in my mind. And one was just listening to people who've already been through it. And obviously there's unforeseen things that can happen. But one of the biggest things that stuck out to me at that event was the people that lost a lot of their portfolios and a lot of their money during 2008 were speculating. And we talk a lot in this tribe about buy and hold cash flow real estate. Stick to the fundamentals. We don't buy land. We don't develop. We're not buying in hopes and dreaming that someday this property will be worth 3-4 times as much, even though it likely will. It's about buy and hold cash flow real estate. And the investors that came out of 2008, okay, or more than okay, were ones that stuck to those investment principles. They stuck to the fundamentals. Buy and hold cash flow real estate. They didn't care what the value of the properties were on paper. They held those properties. The cash flow stayed the same. In some cases, rents went up and the cash flow was better. But there was a lot of speculators that were buying, and their only exit was values had to go up or rents had to go up. And that was the only way the deal worked. And those were the people that lost. You know, there are people that own a few properties, and there are people that own thousands of units. And the ones that bought on speculation, ones that bought needing the property to go up in value and needing rents to go up, those are the ones that lost those properties. So I realized coming away from that, it was such an opportunity to learn what to do right
and what not to do. And everyone's got a different investment philosophy. It really cemented that idea and gave me the opportunity to learn from other people's mistakes. And you just can't discount that.
I love that you say that, because we beat the shit out of speculative investments in the book. I was just going back and doing, looking at that again. And
love that.
And I was the same way. Like I had some spec houses going up. Literally, they called speculative housing. Like I was building spec houses in 08. And I also had rental properties. My single family homes, they just broke even. I was able to hold them. I didn't lose them. My multi-door stuff, duplex. Well, I say my multi-door stuff. I had one duplex at the time. Was actually did better. So like this call today is about failure and what you, how you learn and keep swinging. But like, hey guys, you want to retire and hit R1? Buy and hold cash flow real estate, you know, and we're seeing it now. Mitch, I don't, you know, Mitch and I are seeing that now, or all of us are seeing that now. We're talking to people that are like, they were buying speculative stuff. A lot of flippers. You're going to see a lot of recovering flippers. I'm starting to hear that term where people are like, I'm a recovering flipper.
For sure.
They're buying stuff to flip. Right. And now they're kind of caught holding the bag. This shit doesn't pencil. It doesn't cash flow. They're burning, Nick. They're burning. And we're seeing at the end, people are going to lose their ass again right now. Not because of the subprime thing like away, but it's because of this rapid interest rate rise. And yeah, we're seeing it again. So cash flow is king, baby. We'll look on your cash on cash that gets you to R1.
I like what you said, Gabe, because like it is happening right now. This is not 08. It's a different scenario, but similar outcome.
I actually said that, Mitch. I actually said that. It's happening right now. I just said that.
Unbelievable. This is how this goes back.
But you're
to
unbelievable.
Daddy issues. It really is. You guys are witnessing it right now. It's breaking up the entire podcast.
You know, the powerful thing.
So I think it is happening now. In other words, there's a shift happening in the market. We've seen interest rates go up very quickly to combat inflation, which was also caused by the same people who are now going to save us from inflation, the Fed and our wonderful government.
I love that. Yeah. Let's print some more money and launch something called the Anti-Inflation Act or whatever that is. Good job.
It's like I come over to your house tonight, right, Travis, and I start it on fire, and I run in and I say, hey, man, I want to save you and your family, and I try to take credit for that. You know, like that's basically what happened. But anyway, it's a different scenario, but like people who didn't pay attention to the fundamentals, whether it was spec builders or people who bought technically cash flow properties, in other words, cash flowing, but like the cash flow is way too low because they're basing that on super, super low interest rates, and they weren't thinking about like a shift in the marketplace. They're in trouble. I talk to people all the time that are in trouble on properties that the debt's resetting, right? Their cap rate's at 5 or 6%, and their debt's now at 7 or 8%. They technically possess negative leverage. Every dollar is actually working against them instead of for them. And so, I mean, long story short, if you want to be in this game, you want to scale in real estate, take a look around. What is working and what's not working? And then build your investment thesis off of what's working and go forward versus just like, yeah, I'm just going to jump in and see what happens. You know, you can borrow other people's failures for cheap.
I mean, that's a really good point. Like people say like the largest form of flattery is rip off and duplicate R&D, like people that copy what you're doing and do it, which we do. Hell, like some of the smartest people in the world do that. But also like take it the other way, like look at what doesn't work and what other people are doing. And there's going to be a whole slew of other people that had amnesia, forgot about 08 or got into the market after 08 and then did the speculative game again. And here we are in the same boat. And so the fundamentals are cash flow, right? Do I have enough cash flow that can weather the storm? And for those of you that don't understand debt resetting, if you think that mortgages are like this, you get a mortgage on an office building or a mobile home park or an apartment building, and you don't get mortgages for 30 years. And we pay it off over 30 years and the rate stays locked for 30 years. It's not a house. Commercial debt resets every, you know, 3, 5, 7, or 10 years. And at that point, you're going to get a new interest rate. Like Mitch is saying, if you buy on slim cash flow margins, you bought on like a 1-2 debt hurdle. If you know what that is, go look up debt service coverage ratio, DSCR, right? That debt, your DSCR goes negative. You're now, your net operating income, the profit that the property spits off doesn't even cover the debt. And so you're screwed. Now you're feeding it. Now you've got a cash flowing property. It's just the cash flowing is coming out of your pocket into that property until you die. So that's the wrong kind of cash flow.
That's a good point. We always talk about cash flow. Cash always flows.
Right. That's a good point.
The direction in which it flows. So usually when we're referring to cash flow, we're talking positive cash flow. But it is true. It'll either flow positively or negatively?
That's a really good point. Yeah,
absolutely. So if you want cash flowing property, I would put money in your pocket every month. And Mitch and I did that, like on the run up, we knew. And again, you talk about failure. Like I failed. I lost $100,000 sitting on a piece of land in 08 that I was, and I learned the power of positive cash flowing real estate. Right. And so when Mitch and I were like, we're looking around doing the run up going, haha, I've seen this before. We've seen this sort of bull run and we've seen this frothy market. We've seen these people younger people. I say younger people because I'm old. I'll update Mitch to the punch, but you see younger people that got in at like 2011 and or 12 or 13, they just crushed it. And they weren't really thinking about cash flow fundamentals. But some of the guys, Gabe was smart. A lot of the guys that didn't go through 08, they're learning the hard lesson now. Gabe went on a boat and heard other people talk and go, I'm going to heed that. That's actually important. I'm going to buy high cash flow real estate. But when Mitch and I, we were buying properties when rates were in the three, we have a mobile home park that's at 3%, 3.5% interest right now. But we're like, we want a debt hurdle that's like crazy high. We want such a margin of safety with our cash flow that if and when shit hits the fan, because everything's cyclical, that we can weather the storm. And the people that actually can hold properties and weather the storm, they're the ones that win when they come out the other end. But there was an opportunity cost. The people that got their ass kicked in 08, there was an opportunity cost because they were too busy getting their ass kicked or losing money losing properties to actually take advantage of probably one of the largest wealth transfers ever in our history, which was from like 2009 all the way up to like now. Like people made a fortune. So there is an opportunity cost. So again, learn from, if you're like me and I got to just keep beating my head into a wall over and over again, I learn from my own mistakes, or be smarter like Gabe and actually learn from other people's mistakes and don't make those same mistakes.
I think too, like when I reflect on, you know, on the years, and I don't dwell on those mistakes. Like I try to move on very quick. Like I try to learn quick and then adjust and shift. So it's like, you know, looking back and thinking about, you know, different real estate deals, there's times I didn't do enough due diligence. There's times, I don't know. Like I never really was into flipping, but there was a period of time where I flipped a couple of homes. Like I hated the process too. And I think some of that comes back to what we talk about a lot, that there is a difference between making money and building wealth. And so when we talk about flipping, when we talk about the speculative buying, you can make a lot of money doing that, but it's not the same as buying and holding. And I think some of that is getting clarity around it. We talked about that, like get clarity around our vision. And I think that's a mistake that we often see. And, you know, I was similar in that, yes, I had a clear vision of what I wanted. Yes, I had a clear vision of buy, hold, cash flow real estate. But there's times that, you know, you get distracted from that. And so keeping that clarity on the forefront of your mind, making sure the kind of deals you're taking on align with what you really want is really important. When I'm clear on what I'm trying to buy, it's very easy to say no to the things that don't align with that. And it's very easy to dig into and take down the kind of deals that do align with that. And I just think that I don't think that can be overlooked. So it's not always as easy as like, hey, this is a mistake or this is not. Sometimes the mistake in and of itself is just not having clarity and buying a bunch of shit. Like I know experienced investors that will just go out and buy random stuff, kind of that shiny object syndrome, without thinking whether or not it aligns with what they truly want. And I really do think that's an important piece, is the clarity piece. And not taking action on the things that don't align with that clarity.
So, you know, I had a thought about that. Is it all right if I get vulnerable here for a second, Gabe and Mitch? Is that okay?
I'd love you to get vulnerable and cry a little bit.
So, and I've talked about this on the All Hands call before. I don't know if we publicize this on the podcast piece, but you can still make mistakes, right? After everything I've learned throughout 08, 09, the run up, some of the lessons I've learned. I trust, one of the lessons I've learned is I trusted somebody too much. I invested with somebody else that did not learn their lesson. They mismanaged construction. They ran these properties to the ground, like millions of dollars was missing. And I'll tell you, like I'm literally just at almost the 1 year or just over the 1 year mark for getting the phone call when the bank was going to try and foreclose on these properties. And I had to step in and save it with my balance sheet. It's been a year of hell. And something that Gabe says that I believe in wholeheartedly, but I didn't subscribe to it. I spent probably the last eight or nine months beating the shit out of myself. Like, how could you let this happen? You're smarter than this. You got duped. You're not a smart investor. man, the self-talk was killing me. And not only did it, so you talk about opportunity cost, not only did I not have the time and money really to like take advantage of other really cool opportunities, the opportunity cost of being in that mind space was really bad. When you're telling yourself that you've made a mistake and that you're dumb and how could you do this, and you're questioning yourself, maybe you're not a good business person. Maybe you don't understand financials. Maybe you're not a good investor. Like the opportunity cost of living in that mindset is really bad. And traditionally in life, like I've been pretty good at just saying like, yeah, I made a mistake. Let me just understand what I did wrong so I learn from it. And then just come to the realization, like I can't do shit about 2 minutes ago when I made a mistake. I can't do shit about anything that happened this last year. All you can do is learn from it. But if you're spending all this headspace and emotional energy, like just beating yourself up, that's completely unproductive. It does nothing but actually hurt you. So you just like, all you can focus on is how you can solve things going forward. And Gabe's really good at that. Gabe's good at sort of like, just like learning from it and then only looking at ahead in the future. So yeah, I mean, yes, you'll still make mistakes. People like us still make mistakes. We're still learning our own lessons. And, but now I'm just like, how can I focus on the future? And also like, I said this before, like, I think it happens. Things happen for you and not to you. And I think this happened for me, you know, and I know Gabe's in a similar situation where he's working through some stuff, but like, I've literally written down lessons. Like, what have I learned? Like from a mindset perspective, from an investing perspective, how to vet prospective operators that you're investing with. There's so much that I can learn, and I'll actually make millions and millions and millions of dollars more in the future because of what's happened to me over this last 12 months. And that's the way I look.
Trav, I appreciate you sharing that. I know we've talked a lot about it. I am in a similar situation on a similar property in a similar area. I think the piece where I didn't dwell in it is I don't see that there's a huge benefit.
Zero.
Here's the problem. And this is the advice I'd give to anyone in any area of life. Like, once you identify the problem, then you quickly need to identify what the solution is. Because you know the problem, but when you dwell on the problem, oh, this sucks, this is the problem, this sucks. I thought I was a better investor, I thought I was smarter, how did this happen? Like, I think those are normal thoughts, and it's fine to have that for a moment. But you gotta go in solution mode. What's the solution? Because dwelling in that and sitting in that doesn't get you to a better place. And I think, I know that for some people that just naturally turns on, for some people, they have to work on that. But I really believe in that positive self-talk. And, you know, I too think that this will make me a better investor. Never do I think I know it all, ever. Like, I think that there's always an opportunity to learn and grow. I mean, I own 9 mobile home parks. And one of them, just recently, I'm hearing from the city saying, hey, this can't be a mobile home park anymore. Once the homes come off, you can't bring them back on. I still can't find that in writing anywhere. They're like, if you called, and I'm like, well, I need to see this in writing. Regardless, it's like, you know, it's a learning opportunity. Plus the septic's all jacked up there. So, you know, I'd like to think like, well, geez, I have 8 of them that are operating really well. Like, I know my shit. I know my stuff, right? But here's an opportunity where it's like, okay, I probably should have done some more due diligence. But also, I can't sit in that. So it's now I'm going into solution mode. And one of those solutions is possibly partnering on with a builder to do cottage clusters there.
Sure.
Now they're doing a feasibility study right now. I don't know if that'll be the solution, but I know sitting there going, man, maybe I shouldn't have bought this one park. Man, maybe I, you know, fire sell this thing. And maybe that, I mean, I don't think that's the solution, but I just know that once you identify that problem, once you identify that mistake, not only is it a learning opportunity to maybe not do the same thing again, but it also is an opportunity to find a creative solution and potentially end up with, you know, a better property, a better product than you had before. With my apartment complex, with your apartment complex, Travis, like the long-term buy and hold, you're going to have a strong cash flowing asset. It's, you know, it's been a little bit of a bear to get there, but in the end, you're going to be in a better position because you own it than if you didn't. And you're going to be a smarter investor because you went through it.
Right. And there's 2 things that I take out of that. One, just tying this back to the fundamentals of real estate. Oftentimes, time heals wounds in real estate. You know, you hold onto a property long enough, market cycles change, they ebb and flow, values go up, everything, values usually go up, cash flow goes up. So time heals things. Time heals all wounds in real estate. Also, when you make a mistake, and there's something like big or small, it's a this is a very big mistake I made investing with these people. When you step in and you solve it, and it's a better situation afterwards, or like Gabe, in your particular scenario, what if you like, okay, what if you do get the feasibility study back? You do build these cool cottage clusters. You learn a new skill set. You actually, the property is worth way more than it ever was. And but like, what confidence comes with that? Like, if you know you can solve big problems and figure it out and get yourself out of a sticky situation, it gives you a lot of confidence. And confidence is, you know, so there is, that's one intangible benefit a lot of people don't think about. Like, when I get to the, on the other side of this thing, and I'm like, most of the construction's done. We're in a lease up. I'm working through some smaller challenges, but when it's done and over, I'm like, holy shit, that was 200 units in a city 2,000 miles away, millions of dollars on the line, and investors and lawsuits and all kinds of shit. And I navigated and pulled it out. And I can tell you, by the way, the reason I had confidence that I could solve that particular issue is because of the failures I had early on in life. The fact that I tried to start a company and got my teeth kicked in and failed fucking miserably and huge. Like, and I came out of it okay, and then went on to be very successful. Like, that gave me the confidence to know I could attack this particular issue. And when I attack this issue and solve that, it'll give me the confidence to move forward.
Listen to you guys, I'm like, I go back to that whole thing where it's the relationship with failure. Because like, I had a buddy sit me down the other day and he goes, why is it that everything you touch turns to gold? And I'm like, that's a misconception. That's not true. Not everything I touch turns to gold. There's a lot of failure along the way. You just don't see it. You just don't hear about it. But the way I think about failure is likely different than what the way he thinks about failure. And I think it's probably different than a lot of people think about failure. And like you just talked about, Gabe, and you too, Trav, like, what are you going to focus on after you fail? I think that's the question you talked about. You both said, like, are you looking forward into strategy and like how to make this good and how to like figure this out? And like, is there energy toward a solution, or is there energy toward regret and stress and anxiety and negative self-talk? And I think like we only have so much energy. You wake up during the, you know, you have what, 12 hours during the day or whatever that is, you only have so much energy to put toward either forward or backward. And like, I think a lot of people look at failure as this horrible, terrible thing that happened. And their lesson is they should stop doing things and they should play it safe, versus other people look at it and go, oh, that's interesting. I was just dealt an interesting hand today. How can I take that and bluff my way through, or whatever I need to do, or strategize, or what team do I need to build to solve this and make a good situation out of it?
It just had me reflecting on what I had talked about earlier, you know, on like the relationship side, because I don't think it's only in business. It's so personal. I think everything's kind of intertwined. It's like, you know, you said how people mention you, oh my gosh, everything you touch turns to gold. And you're like, no, that's not how it is. I can't help but think about like me and my wife today have an amazing relationship.
Yeah.
And I think people see that. Like, we actually like each other. We enjoy spending time together. We laugh with each other. Like, I mean, she's my best friend and we have this amazing relationship. And some who don't know us or haven't known us long might think that's just how it's always been.
Sure.
Right. It's those periods of small failures that give you the opportunity to reflect. Like, I could have given up on the relationship too.
Right.
Like, we both thought about it. Right. But like, we wouldn't be where we were today without those failure and the willingness to do better and create what we actually want. And so it doesn't matter if it's on the personal level, on business, on health, whatever it is, like, you recognize it. You adjust, or you choose not to. If you choose not to adjust and make changes, then you know you don't learn from that failure. But if you want it bad enough, relationship, real estate, health, whatever it might be, like, once you recognize that, make the change, do something different. If you want the result to be different,
I love that.
I know it sounds easier. You know, it's easier said than done. But it's as soon as you recognize it. It's like, what can I do to make things different, to make things better, to make things ideal, to align them with what's actually important to me, and then make those changes.
Yeah, I love that. And I think you create your own luck too, you know? Like, you can take a bad situation and you can force it, and you can create, you can look, if you're looking forward, you're strategizing and you're looking for solutions, I think you can create your own luck and you can create opportunities to get out of failure and make that failure just one stopping point in your overall sort of journey to success. So remember, if you're part of the Tribe 0 to 100 Tribe, you can listen in Tuesdays at noon Pacific to live podcasts. A couple other things. Go check out our book on Amazon. We released a couple weeks ago, and we're live on Amazon now. 0 to 100 units book, which is awesome. Entire story and strategy, and a ton of awesome, you know, nuggets in there to bring your portfolio from literally zero to 100 plus units. So go check out that. If you're not part of the Elite Mastermind, check that out as well. Go to 0 to 100@tribe.com and you can learn more about our mastermind. Anything else, guys?
Nope. No, man. Again, go kick ass. Go get to R1. Reach time freedom.
All right.
See you on the other side.